Dr. Shattering Mist, we were talking with IQ in the beginning of this program about the effectiveness of Islamic terrorism in Israel and how the Palestinian Authority, Fatah and PLO, which comprise it, and Hamas, which is also aligned with Islam but opposes it, have deployed the tactic of terror, as have Muslims around the world, and how today 99.9% of terrorist acts are perpetrated by Muslims screaming Allahu Akbar, and that these Muslims are not extremists, they're not radicals, they have not been radicalized, they are fundamentalists. They are the best Muslims on the planet. They are doing what Muhammad did. They are saying what Muhammad ordered them to say. When they scream Allahu Akbar, they're following Muhammad's example when he coined the phrase during the terrorist raid of Kabar, which was a Jewish farming community between Mecca and Medina. He raided them with armed militants, jihadists, for the express purpose of terrorizing them, of stealing their property, of stealing their possessions, of raping their women, of enslaving their children, of killing the men. And as he approached Kabar, this Jewish farming community, early in the morning, he told his jihadists to scream Allahu Akbar. And the purpose of it was to say that Allah was bigger, older, and greater than the God of the Jews, Yahweh. Now, of course, by making that claim, if there had been a single sensible and informed individual among Muhammad's party or Muslims since that time, they would have all have said, wait a minute, that's not possible. First, if there's only one God, that one God cannot be greater than any other God. If there's only one God, then Allah can't be older or bigger. Allahu Akbar in itself, is senseless in a monotheistic religion. And second, if we're yelling Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater, to a community of Jews whose God is Yahweh, then aren't we acknowledging that Allah is not the God of the Torah and the prophets and the Psalms? And if that's the case, isn't the primary claim that you've made, Muhammad, regarding your Quran and Allah and Islam proven false by yelling Allahu Akbar at these Jews? It's the same logic that should be used by everyone today to demonstrate that Islam is a fraud. But Muslims don't use evidence and reason. That is not the approach that they take. They much prefer terrorism. It has become the signature act of the religion. Muhammad himself says, I have been made victorious with terror. He was a terrorist. The Quran is filled with terrorism. Allah, the wannabe God of Islam, claims to be a terrorist. And there is no place that Muslims like to terrorize more than Israel. They love to terrorize Jews. The four most ruthless terrorist assaults presented in the Quran and Hadith are all Jewish communities, terrorized by Muhammad and the first Muslims. Nothing has changed. Yahweh, knowing this, inspiring this around 1000 BCE, 1,600 years before the first Muslim would terrorize a Jew, told us prophetically that we should not fear nor respect Islam. We should not fear nor respect the weapons that they fling, the bombs that they drop, the plague that spews out of their mouth, this destructive and contagious pandemic. We ought not respect it We ought not be frightened by it. We ought not be awed by it. We ought not dread it. We ought not revere it. It was a instruction to all of us today. Islam uses terror because people are afraid of terrorists. You should not fear nor respect any part of the darkness. Now, when did Muhammad take his wild ass ride from Mecca to Jerusalem? It's called the night's journey and the darkness of night. When did Muhammad first encounter the dark spirit representing Allah in the cave, creating the observation of Ramadan for Muslims? In the middle of the night. Everything about Islam is darkness. When Paul allegedly saw his spirit on the road to Damascus, wasn't he rendered blind? Wasn't Yosha's principal miracle to cause the blind to see? And yet the spirit that possessed and influenced Paul caused the seeing to be blind. Darkness is the nature of religion. He says, don't fear, don't respect any part of the darkness or any part of the missiles flying about on wings through the air in the daytime, nor the plague ravaging and devastating, ruining and robbing, violently assailing and spoiling during the midday light. Islamic terrorism is that most diseased, widespread, and deadly plague of our time. And there is no debating that. Islam is the most deadly disease, the most widespread source of death and destruction of our day. It says, don't fear nor respect that plague, ravaging and devastating during the midday light, nor the fatally destructive, contagious, pandemic disease, which cuts off and separates, which cuts away, destroying all life. Remember, the Muslim has said, it doesn't matter if they capture us, it doesn't matter if they kill us. It doesn't matter. We have nothing to live for. This disease is incurable of Islam. But it cuts off and separates everyone it infects, not only from God, but from truth. And that makes sense, since God is truth. Continually traveling and stalking in association with the darkness. If Islam would stay put, if it wasn't bent on world conquest, it would be one thing, but it's not. The Quran orders Muslims to fight and to kill until the whole world submits to Allah, the one to be God, and that Islam is the only religion tolerated on earth. That is what the Quran orders Muslims to do. That's what Muslims today, as part of the Islamic State, are doing. It's stalking. It's pursuing. It's destroying and killing. On Psalm 9:7, we read, 1,000 will actually fall over time by your side, and 10,000 by means of your right hand, but will not approach, touch, or strike you. Do you know that apart from Islam, there really is no disease that would cause 1,000 to fall in the literal sense, dying, in association with something that an individual like myself can do with their right hand, which is to write a book using the Islamic Quran and Hadith to expose and condemn this terrorist religion. But Christianity has killed and continues to kill more people than does Islam, not in the physical sense, in the sense of one's soul. Far more souls succumb to Christianity. Far more souls cease to exist as a result of the disease of Pauline Christianity than Islam. And so since this concept of falling over time, out of control, descending to a lower position, Nafal, and since Nafal is directly related to Nefesh, sharing the first two consonants with Nefesh, it's the soul that he's talking about. And it is true that 1,000 Muslims, 1,000 Christians will actually fall over time by my side. And it's true that 10,000 will fall by means of what I and others have accomplished with our right hand, by what we have written. But it's amazing that the most effective individuals the world over at exposing Islam and Christianity, but particularly Islam, since it's so vicious. You know, there were a half a dozen people murdered cold blood in Pakistan in the last 2 days over blasphemy, over insulting Allah, the Islamic God, and Muhammad, the wannabe prophet. They're vicious. They're murderous. And it says that 1,000 and 10,000 will fall, but it will never touch or strike those of us who engage moving through this darkness to expose and condemn it. Yahweh protects us because he wants people left without excuse. He wants people to know the truth. All right, as we continue to move through this psalm, we have, as Glenn would say, Captain Kirk with us. We have Scotty running the board. We need more power, Scotty. I guess that would make me Spock, the emotionless Vulcan. But how you doing there, Captain Kirk?
I'm doing pretty good now that I got a promotion.
Yeah. Does Terry know that?
I was a private yesterday, too, thanks to Glenn. Now I've been moved right up.
there you go. Yeah, you need to tell Terry you'll be referred to from henceforth as captain.
He's playing at home so far. So.
playing at home. Not even the Sound of Music, Captain, huh?
No. I don't want to interrupt the flow. I just wanted to kind of ask one question. It kind of bothers me. In history books that you read and the Christian stuff, you have the apostles or the disciples. We know one of the James, I assume his name was Jacob too.
Of course.
There's two of them.
There's the sons of thunder, James, or Jacob. Uh-huh. And then there's the brother of Yahusha, Jacob. The brother of Yahusha, Jacob, of course, creates a little bit of a wrinkle for Roman Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Roman Catholicism, Mary was a perpetual virgin.
Yes.
How did Yahusha have a brother named Jacob if she remained a perpetual virgin?
You gotta have faith.
Is faith a synonym for remain indoctrinated and don't think?
And don't ask the hard questions.
Yeah. Hey, you know what Jacob actually means?
Is heel catcher or the?
To grab one's
heel. On the ground or to do with perseverance.
Yeah, there's two aspects to it that are interesting. It means to supplant one's heel. you know, if you're if you dig in your heels, you're resistant to being led astray. You can't be pulled off the path if you dig in your heels. And if you ever tried to walk really supplanting your heel before you take your next step, see how upright you become. You, I mean, you're really walking upright. Your countenance is lifted. Your walk, your gait is more straightforward. It's a really straightforward, upright way to walk, which is how Yahweh viewed Jacob, who became Yisrael. And then there's a very interesting prophecy regarding the heel and therefore Yisrael. One of the first prophecies, and after you get through the 7 days of creation, all of which are prophetic, and then the affinity for the Shabbat, which is prophetic, each of those talking about the eras of humanity and then the timeline of Yahweh's plan of salvation. You get to the point where Yahweh is telling each of the three parties in the midst misciting his testimony in the Garden of Eden, that they'll each have a different consequence for having done that. And man's going to toil, woman's going to bear children painfully. And what was the penalty imposed upon Hasatan?
Well, he would be crushed by the heel I forget exactly how it went, but this...
He would be crushed on the head, but
the
he would
the
grab the... Yeah, he'd grab the heel. He would menace the heel of the woman while he would be ultimately crushed on the head. He, slithering on his belly, he has sought to menace Jacob, Yisrael, for his entire existence.
Right.
It's why Islam is a satanic religion, demonizes Jacob, the Yisrael. It's why socialist secular humanism has as its conspiracy foe Jews.
Always the Jews.
It's why Christianity was created as an anti-Semitic religion. It's why the Roman Empire was so anti-Israel. So Satan has always faithful, I would say, in adhering to that prophecy.
Right. He's totally consistent with this.
Yeah, and you know
but
why Satan
well.
Goes after Jacob, the one who supplants his heel, the basis of Israel?
Why him over what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, why would Satan choose to go after Jacob and Israel as opposed to others?
Well, he's the family with the 12 tribes, I mean, his sons.
Yeah, it's the family, it's what... It's the, amongst humans, it's the humans that Yahweh loves the most, so let's go after what God loves.
Yeah.
And second,
he's already got
aren't 100% of Yahweh's messengers?
Probably so.
Yisrael? Jacob? We're playing that just for you, Captain Kirk.
Well, I illustrated nine sci-fi books a couple of years ago, so I guess I have some association with it, so that's okay.
You were an illustrator of sci-fi books?
Yeah, I'm an artist, yeah. Well, I do that.
Okay.
I've done quite a few, mostly portraits and things, but... Anyway, my question...
Okay, so here I've given you all the background on Jacob, since you mentioned Jacob. That's just because that's the fun thing to do. But I could count on you and getting back on your question and not losing track.
The apostles, historically, we're told
yes.
they all came to, other than John or Yohanan, they came to some pretty horrible deaths. I don't know that you can find that historically accurately all the time. I mean,
yeah,
might be
I don't
heaven.
Think. Yeah, I don't think
because
we know.
We don't know whether Peter
I think,
went to Rome, much less did.
I think it's unlikely that that Shimon Kefesh, Peter, ever went to Rome. I think it's highly unlikely.
Right.
I think it is quite possible that Paul, who was not an apostle and not a disciple, went to Rome. He was never imprisoned there. However, that's a myth. We know nothing about the deaths of Yahuqanan or Matanyah or of either one of the Yaqubs. I'd say that for the most part, we don't know, and we don't know for a reason. It's just as we don't know, you know, much of anything, even about the physical death of the body of Yahusha. It's because it's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just wondering, because they would have been under the same protection. I mean, some prophets have been killed. Mm-hmm. Moshe mm-hmm. didn't. Daniel didn't. David wasn't. I mean, so some of the apostles could have been killed violently by their things.
For the most part, I think they lived very long lives.
That's what I was thinking. It would seem, why would you cut them off short when they have so much to do?
They live, for the most part, they live very, very long lives. But for the most part, they live very long lives. Yahuqanan was dictated revelation around number 70 CE. Mm-hmm. In 30 CE, Yahuqanan, for him to have done what he was asked to do, had to be, I would say, at least 20 and probably closer to 30. Mm-hmm. So let's compromise and say he was 25 in 30 CE. You add 40 years to that, and now he's 65 when Revelation is being revealed to him. At 65. You know, 65 back in that day, that was an old codger.
Sure. That feels pretty old now.
Yeah, that's really the only one that we know. When his last official writing was.
Yeah.
And that would have been at 65. We don't know when he would have died thereafter. I think there's a lot of issues. One is these men were simply witnesses to Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more, nothing less. They ought not have tombs that we would venerate.
No.
Their lives ought not be emulated. And there's only really two of them that wrote about what they witnessed that benefits us today, Matanyah and Yahuqanan.
Yahuqanan.
Yeah.
Well, if they wrote about it, they'd certainly burned them all up or destroyed them.
We don't have anything from Shimon Kethesh directly. Indirectly, we do. Mark was Shimon. Yeah, Shimon Kethesh is translator. He did not speak Latin, and so when he spoke to Latin audiences, Mark was his translator, and so what he said to Latin audiences, Mark wrote down. It's interesting that Yahusha never, that Shimon Kefesh must never have spoken of what transpired on Bukurim, because there's no reference to anything after the fulfillment of Pesach in Mark's testimony. The conclusion of Mark that goes on that speaks of Bukurim and the resurrection, all that, was added many centuries later.
Wow. Well, the only point I was making is, you know, in the 91st Psalm, it certainly should protect you. I mean, regardless whether you are historically, you know, doesn't need to protect you.
I don't think it's always that you're going to be protected. You look at Yeshayah and. It certainly wasn't the case with him. No. You look at Yahusha. Did Yahweh protect the physical body of Yahusha?
No.
No, sacrifice.
No, you take your chances, but at least the Christian myth is almost all of them are dying, you know, telling the story somewhere, except for John.
Yeah. That is because the whole Christian persecution under Diocletian, for example, never occurred.
Hmm.
Never occurred. The whole idea, I mean, you're an educator. The whole notion of a Christian persecution under the Romans never occurred. It's a complete and total fabricated myth. And it was all designed to make Christianity worth dying for. But it never occurred. The Diocletian wasn't overtly opposed to Christianity. He didn't have any edict which says, go hunt down and kill Christians. There is no evidence that Christians were fed to the lions in the Colosseum. None of this is true. In fact, it got so bad with Christians wanting to die to prove the value of their faith that there was a bunch of really funny lines from the Roman emperors at the time. They said, you want us to go kill you so that you can die a martyr. But I tell you what, here's the rope. Go hang yourself. There's the cliff. Go run off it yourself. If you're so, motivated to die to prove the value of your faith, go do it. But just don't bother me. The whole Christian persecution thing under Diocletian that was somehow remedied by Constantine and his Edict of Milan is not true. Even the Edict of Milan had nothing to do with Christianity. With the Edict of Milan, it was a universal religious edict that made all of Rome's religions acceptable. It didn't. The Edict of Milan didn't establish Christianity as the state religion of the Roman Empire. The first individual that established Christianity as the official state religion was Theodosius. And he followed Constantine by 75 years.
It was in little steps.
Yeah, but the whole Christian martyr thing, it's a myth. So this idea that somebody said, I want to be crucified, but crucify me upside down because I don't deserve to die the same way as my Savior, and that how they were all killed for promoting their faith. It's not true. Now there are times, there are times when dying to deliver a message, showing that you're so committed to the message that you're willing to die for it. In the case of Yashaya, I think it sometimes helps to underscore the merit of the message. For example, when I said I was, when I was willing to go and expose and condemn Islam, I recognized that if I did this under my own name and if I was killed because of it, it would substantially increase the visibility of the message. And I was myself, I was willing to die to convey the message. I just didn't want any Muslim attacking or invading or even entering my home or approaching my family.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't their mission. And so I always looked at the 91st Psalm offering to do something I had not even asked for, which was personal protection in addition to family and home protection. Because I recognize there are some times where being killed for the right thing brings attention to the right thing.
Yeah, but you don't have to rush out and jump in front of the bus.
Oh, and I wasn't going to go in. You know, it's like the guy that was the starter of the referendum and the revolution that was called the Arab Spring. The guy that was the sold vegetables on a street stand, and he doused himself in gasoline and burned himself alive.
Yeah.
You know, that killing oneself to bring attention to one's plight, I think is almost always, if not always, a very bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Being killed for standing up for what's right is often a good thing to have happen. But being able to live, and this says, you're going to live while enduring the darkness, walking through the darkness, that's a better thing yet.
Well, I didn't mean to get you off track.
I rather like the realization that this promise that's in the 91st Psalm. And I ended the program yesterday saying that the 91st Psalm was written for me. Now, I didn't say it was written only for me.
No,
the 91st Psalm was written for you too.
You can personalize it.
But personalizing the 91st Psalm, I think, is a really important thing to do if you're going to engage, particularly in exposing and condemning religious disease. It's if you're going to expose the source of terrorism, it is something you ought to personalize. But, Kirk, I would go so far as to say that the Torah was written for me.
Mm-hmm.
The covenant was conceived for me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was written for me. It was conceived for me. It wasn't written only for me, and it wasn't conceived only for me. But, you know, we discover Yahweh independently through the guidance of the Torah, and we come to be adopted into the family individually. There is no group session where you're all adopted as a congregation. That's all.
Well, don't you all say that you got to go through the Passover door all by yourself?
Yeah, it's single file. Mm-hmm. That Passover door is
everything
single
is
file.
You.
Right. Yeah, it's not the Passover colonnade. You know, it's the Passover door.
Yeah.
And matzah isn't plural. You know, there's one of them. No, and Bukurim is plural because those who pass single file through the doorway and along the threshold are adopted into a family. Well, look how fast you were demoted from Captain Kirk back to deserts of Yehuda. We were talking about this, the 91st Psalm, and you were looking as to how important it is to rely on Yahweh's name and to be aware of what he had to say. The next verse after this 1,000 will actually fall over time by your side, and 10,000 by means of your right hand, but it will not approach, touch, or strike you. This next line, Kirk, is one that resonates with me. It's one that selfishly appeals to me. It says, "Nevertheless, uniquely, you will be able to observe with your eyes and see the recompense of the guilty."
Evil men, yeah.
Now, the reason that appeals to me is that when you're talking about recompense, this is gamul in Hebrew. That is the consequence that is earned and deserved. It's the appropriate result of bad behavior, particularly behavior perpetrated by religious and political leaders, is what gamul represents. So what Yahweh, and then he uses guilty after that, which is rasha, evil, the things that are disassociated from the Torah. So if you're able with your eyes to see the recompense of the guilty, doesn't it strike you that we're going to be able to see the trials?
Absolutely. What else could it be?
That's what it strikes me. That this evil isn't going to affect us personally, but yet we're going to have the opportunity to be witnesses at their trial. Very few things I would like more than being a witness, even a participant, in the trial of Paul, in the trial of Constantine, in the trial of Muhammad, the trial of the Roman emperors like Hadrian.
Or Akiba.
Oh, yeah, or Akiba. Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine being able to be at a trial and offer evidence to condemn the two belligerents in the second war of Rome against Judea, Akiba on one side with Bar Kokhba and Hadrian on the other?
You just want to say, how dare you? What were you thinking, you dummy?
Yeah, both of you. Both of you.
I mean, your collective brain?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I would love to be at the trial of even Abu Bakr, the man who gave his six-year-old daughter to Muhammad to be his sex toy.
Yeah, God.
And became the first leader of the Islamic war machine, and it was under his leadership that he forced all of Arabia to surrender to Islam, surrender to Islam or die. And it was then under his direction that Muslims became the most bloodthirsty barbarians in human history. Yeah, I'd love to be there.
Absolutely. for those who are out there, are you going to post 91 anytime soon?
You know, I'm struggling with 91 at the moment, and it's because when I came back east, I did not take my Dead Sea Scrolls Bible with me.
Okay.
And so all I have access here to is the Masoretic text. Okay. So what I may do is I may go ahead and finish the translation of it using the Masoretic text over this weekend, and then put a note there that says, you know, from 10 on, I'm going to have to go back and adjust it for the Dead Sea Scrolls. I don't think I've ever found anything. In fact, I know I have never found anything as copy edited as this is.
That's what you were saying.
And I think it's used by Christians and Jews and religious people of all ilk to claim God's protection. And so they all have to alter it to fit their particular proclivities.
Their particular use.
Yeah. So it's really a mess. And the other thing that's really interesting, and the Dead Sea Scrolls help make this evident, is that 91 is the conclusion of a series of songs written by Dode that are specifically geared at not human foes, but demonically inspired foes. So it's those individuals that are the malicious ones here are demon possessed. They're like Paul. They are like Muhammad.
We will be there tonight.
Yes.